بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. Peace and love everybody. I'm Brother Ali. It's the Travelers Podcast. I'm glad you're here. I started to say it's a special episode, but I say that almost every week. And it's because I really believe it, or at least I really intend it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all have things that we could be doing. I live in one of the most beautiful places on earth, rich with meaning and history and things to explore. And you don't even have to like really go far. You can go to a place in Istanbul, Turkey that you've been 100 times and find something new or find someone new. And it's an amazing place full of meaning and full of contradictions and full of beauty and full of just incredible experiences. And also I have 3 daughters and I'm very happy just chilling with them. When I turn these mics on, whatever the episode is, it's always because I'm really intending to connect. And ultimately, I'm intending to glorify the divine source of love and beauty and truth and meaning, and to bring about through that exploration, through that connection, through that glorification, to bring about peace. I do my podcast for world peace. No, but for real, what the Muslims believe when we say assalamu alaikum, the word salam, it's translated to be peace, and it is that. But it doesn't just mean stillness or quiet. It means to be whole. It means to be one. It means to be unbroken. It means to be balanced and rectified and in a sense of wellness, in a state of wellness, to be functioning, for things to be functioning as they were intended by the divine. And that's a really high, beautiful thing. And we're put in this part of our existence together to share that with one another. And so I'm happy to share that with people that are, you know, that I have any overlap with at all. It's enough of an overlap for me to be in space and time at the same time as somebody else, or even not, to be sharing the human condition, to be sharing also the condition of the world, is enough for me to say like, well, what can I find in this person? And what can I reflect in them? And what can I share with them? And so then the more we have in common, it just really, you know, it just gets deeper based on that, or it gives us these frameworks and languages. So if I have hip hop in common, if I have culture in common, if I have Islam in common, if I have any of the things that matter to me in common with somebody, then, you know, then that gives us a framework. It makes it really easy and obvious for us to get to that stuff. But I talk to people all the time that it would seem like I have nothing in common with. It's a really beautiful part of what I do for a living. I travel so much. And I also realize I'm always adjusting. Last week, we put out this episode with Slick Rick that I recorded 15 years ago. And it really weirds me out how different my voice is. Like, to hear my voice from 15 years ago, it was a really, I'm still processing, what does it mean, you know, that I spoke so differently then. Like, why did I talk like that? And why do I talk like this? And how did it change so drastically without me intending it? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kind of thing where a person can look at themselves and say, like, if I can make these dramatic shifts and changes without realizing that I'm doing them, like, what kind of person could I be turning into? Like, we don't know. We're always in flux. Like, we're always traveling. We're always in motion. And so if we don't have intention, and if we don't have reflection, so it's important for me. And that's one of the beautiful things I love about being friends with somebody like Ant or BK or a certain other peer, or Merce, you know, people that I've known. I have a really dear friend in Minneapolis that doesn't like me to say his name, but, you know, I have another friend that I've known since I first converted to Islam. Somebody that's super honest with me. All these guys are really honest with me in different ways, you know, and they know all the stuff that I show you in music and in the podcast and everything, but they also know another side of me. And they would never say that the podcast me or the music me isn't true. They believe that, you know what I'm saying? But they also know something maybe that I can't fully see myself, you know? And so it's really important because it's very difficult for us to see ourselves. The great poet Rumi says, the eye can't see itself, you know? the eye can't see itself. So we are like the thing in me that sees everything, the eye, my eye can't see itself. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing point to make, you know? So it's one of the beautiful things about this podcast and about being a public person and being also somebody that makes art. Like I can listen to my art and I know that my art has changed because it's one time where I'm very hyper-focused. When I'm rhyming, I'm really focused on the rhythms and my voice and where my voice is sitting and all this kind of stuff. But when I'm speaking, I'm not as aware of it. And, you know, so I've just been thinking a lot about it. And a lot of people have given me some beautiful feedback too, because people that are close to me know that this has been, it's a punch and it's heavy on me that I transitioned that much with, because for me, speaking is everything. Like speaking is my superpower. So, and I went from being a person that could talk my way in and out of anything to being in a place where nobody here speaks English, except for a very small, you know, crew and cohort of Westerners, Western religious people that are here for similar reasons. And those people are really dope and I really love them. But like just going out about in the world, all I really know how to say to people are the very, very, very basics. So I cannot speak to people in ways that convey the type of depth that I'm used to. And so hearing this has really been a thing. And there are people that talk to it like, man, you know, there's all these reasons, you know. And there are very like, there are outward reasons. I stopped cursing as my default. That's one of them. I also, at the time that I recorded that interview, I had only lived in a small, specific group of people and geography. And I just started to travel a little bit. But it was before I went and actually got an apartment in a place that I loved. So there was a while where I was, you know, really attracted to New York and to Philly and to Seattle and to the Bay Area. And I actually like set up in those, like I've stayed in those places extended periods of time. You know what I'm saying? And so I have crew there, I have friends there. I have places that I go there. I've got history in those places. You know what I'm saying? And so it was before that. And now I live in another country. I've lived in another country for the last 3 years. But then also my circle has expanded so much. And there are so many different types of people that I talk to. And one of the things that I realized too is that, you know, we are who we are. And every person is an ocean of meaning and experiences and perception and all this stuff. We all got all this stuff going on. And when we sit with somebody, like I said, I'm looking for the overlap. And I think most of us are. Even if we're overlapping based on being angry at each other. Like I think that the people that we engage with and give a lot of ourselves to, our energy to, it says something about us. You know, I was just learning about Sultan Muhammad Al-Fatih. Allah be well pleased with him, have mercy on him. He's the one that led the Ottomans to opening up Istanbul, the city of Constantinople. And, you know, he fought a lot of battles. And at that time, I mean, that was a time when the world was at war. And one of his biggest adversary, his big enemy was Vlad the Impaler, who was known for impaling people. And he also, they say he was the original Dracula. Shout out to my man, Abu Ayyub, IstanbulSpiritualTours.com, in the shade of the minaret. He gives tours, he teaches online classes. He's one of my like close friends here in Istanbul. We live like a couple blocks from each other. Inshallah, I wanna have him on the podcast. But, you know, like a lot of us, like the people that are our adversaries, they say something about us. You know what I'm saying? And we don't want to have, we want to even think about like, who is worthy of being my enemy? We should think about that and don't have corny enemies. You know what I'm saying? Have an enemy that's worth being fought. Have an enemy that's worthy of that, you know? Similarly with our sexual partners. We had an imam back in the day that used to tell us, young men, you know, this is in the 90s, and he would say, some of you young brothers get with these women for these one night stands. And you call them hoes. I mean, forgive my language. You call them hoes. He said, but anybody that you go through the process of creating life with, whether life is created or not, you're going through the routine of creating life. anybody that you do that with, you are their equal. So you should always know that, you know what I'm saying? And only be intimate with people. And of course, in Islam, we only if when we're married. But he's like, you only should be intimate with women that you feel that you're their equal or you want to be their equal. And it's the same way with adversaries. Like, who's it going to be? So I say all that to say that the people that we engage, like when I talk with these people or when I hang out with these people, I'm going to be a little bit different version of myself with Jake One that I am with Merce, or that I am with Tone Trump, or that I am with Dr. Cornell West, with one of my peers, somebody I'm getting to know, one of my teachers, somebody that like the hood, like inner city Islam is what we have in common, versus somebody that, you know, the legacy of the freedom movement is what we have in common. It's just going to be different. It's going to bring different parts out of us. And I have very close and dear people in my life now that I couldn't have imagined that version of me, that 15 years ago version of myself. That guy couldn't even have imagined the type of people that are in my life now. It makes me emotional to think about it, you know? The people that I've become very, very close with. And there are people all over the world, people in West Africa and people in the Arab world and people in, you know, it's really incredible. So when I say that this episode is special, it's because I really intend these episodes to be special. Like, we got to do our sponsors and we got to check the numbers and we got to all that kind of stuff to keep going. But what's really most important to me is that we really, this is where we explore life together. And wherever I'm at in the world, and that's the part that I've loved about making music, the type of music that we make, we're exploring life together. And I love the fact that I'm free to do that. And I love the fact that I'm free to share it. And I love the fact that there are people who respond to it and who also are doing that, are showing up to do that together. That is an enormous blessing that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. And the fact that all my favorite people, it's made me close with them. The people that I look at, like I look out into the, you know, the cultural landscape, and there are people that I like. I've said this a bunch of times, but I really love Jay-Z's music. It inspires me so much. He's one of my favorites of all time. And it's not that I don't want to know him, but I'm not really tripping. You know what I'm saying? And I've been around Jay-Z, and if I wanted to maybe try to pursue something, I've got interesting things I can say to Hov. You know what I'm saying? Most of the time I say I'm the guru and I'm like, hey, you should tell Jay that da 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 da. You know what I mean? Like, cause he named his son Rumi. He and Beyonce, I'm sorry, their daughter of their twins, they named Rumi. And I said, you know, this about Rumi and that. And I said, you know, you could tell. And he was like, you should tell him. I'm like, oh yeah, it's all right. You tell him. You know what I'm saying? I love Kanye West music, and especially back in the day, I really, really was inspired by his music. And one time we were in Hawaii and Rhymefest was on his way to Hawaii. Rhymefest, a great friend of mine who helps Kanye with his music and writes a lot of his music. He's one of the people that's known Kanye for years and can actually tell him the truth. And I just tweeted one time, me and BK actually were in Hawaii with our families. We did some shows and we were about to leave, but Rhymefest hit me up, said, yo, Kanye is actually in Hawaii. I'm flying in tomorrow. He's got a studio. He's got this area. He's working on his new album and you should come, like just come and hang out and, you know, you can play some of your music if you want, or like, man, he loves just having dope MCs around and I'll make sure you get to be in the room. And if you have ideas for lines or lyrics or ways to flip things, he's like, man, he loves that. And he's like, man, I think he would really, I think there might be a place for you kind of in this like creative cipher of Kanye West. And man, I'm telling you, Kanye's music is a big part of like my marriage and like it means a lot to me. And I was just like, I don't know, man. It just doesn't feel like a place that I'm supposed to be. You know what I mean? And maybe that's a bad decision, because that's when they were making My Dark, Beautiful, Dark, Twisted Fantasy. It's a classic album, no question. But it just didn't feel that way. But then there are people in culture that I look at and I'm like, of all these people, not only do I love this person's work, but I love them and I feel connected to them. And over and over and over again, usually without me being too pushy, I'm never pushy about it. Sometimes I'll make it known, but I try not to be too pushy about it. But over and over and over again, it's come true. And these are some of the people in my life that I love the most, you know? And it doesn't have really much to do with how famous they are. You know, probably my favorite of all of them is Amir Suleiman. And he might be it's hard to say, he's Grammy nominated and I'm not, you know what I'm saying? He got nominated twice, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Once he did the B-side of Dave Chappelle's Vinyl, you know, when Dave Chappelle did, I think he called it 846. The B-side of that Vinyl is Amir Suleiman doing Come for the Hills, We Must Win, which if you haven't watched that, the best way to do that one, in my opinion, is to go on YouTube and watch Amir doing that. He's standing underneath a bridge in Oakland. It's black and white at the beginning, and it slowly becomes color, and it's him wearing a black leather jacket, and it's just incredible. Come for the Hills, We Must Win, Amir Suleiman. Go check that out. You know, so it's Amir, and it's Yasiin Bey, and Dave Chappelle, and Cornel West, and Chuck D, and all of these really incredible people. And then even teachers, even the teacher, the Muslim teachers that I love, that I've been able to connect with them and to really be with them. It's a really very beautiful thing. So that's what I love about what I do. And this podcast to me is more than anything else, it's about that. So I just want to stop really quickly and say this podcast is always brought to you by Zakat Foundation, Z-A-K-A-T Foundation. So go to zakat.us on social media. Zakat.org is their website. There's always stuff going on in the world. There's always people that need help. Zakat Foundation is good and they do really great work. And I really love what their ethos is. I love what their approach is. I like the way that they move from what I've seen and from what I've been a part of. I'm not a part of all their campaigns. But they do, it's really dope the way that they do it. Also BetterHelp, BETTERHELP.com/travelers. That's how I do therapy. And it's, man, therapy is, whew, I can't recommend it enough, you know. Somebody came in the comments and they were saying, shouldn't recommend therapy to people. And it's interesting because the way that they were talking about therapy, they were really dissing therapy. And I'm like, you're allowed to have your opinion, but that's not what therapy is. You have a misunderstanding of what therapy is. And that's part of why I wanted to advertise BetterHelp. I'm not saying, like, man, if you can actually go into a place in your neighborhood and talk to a therapist in person, as somebody with a lot of experience who lives in your neighborhood and all that stuff, if you can do that, do that. That's the best way to do it, no doubt. I'm not saying that I think this is the best way to do therapy, but a lot of people don't have access. They don't know how to have access. They're afraid to do it. A lot of people just do stuff online. That's just how people do everything. Most people, it's like, if I want to learn how to garden, it would be best to go and be with some gardeners and put your hands in the dirt with them. That's the best thing. That's the best way to do it. But a lot of people don't do things like that now. And I'm a person that, you know, I say it every week, but I don't live in America and I don't have a job. So I can't just go into an office in my neighborhood and see a therapist. So I see a therapist online. I actually just started with a new one. And at the end of the conversation, he was like, hey, you said you travel for work. Are you a rapper? And I was like, yep. And he's like, did you ever perform at so-and-so venue? And I was in Europe. And I was like, yep. And he was like, I used to work there. We've actually met. Like back in the days when I was in college, I worked in that venue and you came in there and me and you had a conversation. And so we've actually met. I'm like, oh, crazy. And he's like, what's your stage name? And I was like, Brother Ali. And he's like, yeah, man. Take this week and until our next meeting. Think about if this is okay with you. Because he's like, I'm cool, but like, I know who you are. So I'm like, all right. I think it's probably fine. We'll see. see how the next session feels. But on BetterHelp, if I don't feel good about this dude, I can just hit the change therapist button and have a different guy or woman by next week, you know? So we'll see how it goes. But BetterHelp is a really good way to access therapy. And the people that I've heard that diss therapy don't, they're not dissing what therapy is. They're thinking, they're dissing what they think therapy is. And I feel the same way about Islam. I feel the same way about hip hop. I feel the same way about, like, yeah, if you genuinely don't like hip hop music and you don't think it's good, first I want to know, do you really understand what hip hop is? Are you aware of what it really is? And there's less people like that. But also the same thing with Islam. Like, or when a lot of times people will just say religion. And it's like, dude, you don't know every religion. You only know the religious experience you've had. You know the mainstream understanding of some version of a Western, you know, Roman Catholic or American Protestant religion. That's what you know. You don't know religion. You just don't like what you know. And they don't even know that very well usually. So it's like, yeah, you don't have to agree with me. That's cool. But what is important to me is when there's something that I really value and I know is a really beautiful thing, that people at least have an understanding for what it is and at least have their own experience with it. Because you want for your people you care about what you know is good for yourself. And so I'm glad to have this partnership with BetterHelp. So if you go to betterhelp.com/travelers, you get a discount on your first week. And then we also get a commission to help the work that we do here. But then the other thing that we really keeps this show going is the caravan. And the caravan is something that me and Brendan, BK1, have really been investing in. We just uploaded some new things. So, all right, caravan, you go to brotherali.com/join. And there's different levels. So the $5 level gets you access to the stuff that we upload there. There's a $25 level. There's a $100 level. That $100 level is really dope. That we have a community of people there. Some of them have been there for like a year and a half, coming up on 2 years now. I might get them more. I love these people, dude. These are really, really amazing people. And one of them just really opened up to us in a way that he hadn't before. He's one of my favorite. I want to say my favorite, but I really love the way that everybody shows up in this group. And they're from different walks of life and, you know, different experiences and identities and lifestyles. And, there's a woman in this group who works for the school board. And she was sharing with us that they're going through negotiations. And I can't say too much because a lot of it's confidential. And she didn't share anything confidential. But one of the things that just hearing her experience is there's a union and some activists that are doing organizing activist kind of political theater tactics against the school board that she's representing. And she's like, they're being dishonest though. Like there's certain things that they're accusing us of doing that they know aren't true. And so hearing her perspective on that, I was just saying in the group, like, and we have a Slack channel where we communicate as a group on a daily basis almost sometimes. And I'm like, yo, there's a time in my life when I would have definitely just automatically assumed that the union side and the teachers and the whatever, you would have been the machine that I was raging against. And so for me to hear somebody who is so self-aware, so aware of like just even her personal story of how she herself got educated. It's amazing. You know what I'm saying? And she came to a show and we hung out at the show. And then the next day we went and had coffee. And I'm just like, dude, if anyone would meet this woman, including me in a different situation, they would have no idea what she's been through. And they would have no idea how profound her experience is because she's so tough and on the money. She's got it so together. She's so clear about who she is and what she wants and how she wants to do it and what her mission in the world is. I would have no clue. But knowing her backstory, and then also knowing that she is one of the people that is trying to benefit the system from within, and she fights hard to be able to do it. It's really important, you know? And we just had a guy in the group that just these things that we've come to know about him that he doesn't really speak very directly about. He was just like, somebody new joined the group a month or so ago and just kind of asked about him. Was like, hey, am I understanding this right? That, you know, this and this. And he was like, yes, these are things about me that for some people are an identity that they have to announce to people. But for me, I'm not asking anyone's permission and they don't need to, I hope I'm saying this right. This is my perception of what he said. But he said, you know, this isn't for me to give a speech to somebody. He's like, what really matters is, can I live life alongside people? So I just share my living of life and let people figure it out for themselves. And the people that are able to do life with me, they do. And the ones that don't, they don't. And just hearing somebody explain that was really, really powerful for me. So the caravan is really dope. But okay, so that's the $100 level. Not everybody's going to do that, I understand. And we keep that limited. It's like a certain number of people because we want it to be a small group. A small group or just the dynamics of small groups are really important to me, especially when people are opening up. There's got to be a type of trust and bond and like experience there that you've got to be able to keep track of and be aware of everybody in the space. You know what I'm saying? It's really important. So, but the $5 level, you get access to this whole thing, this whole like streaming service that we're building. And there's all kind of content up there from all different types of things. There's talks that I've given. There's, you know, lectures. There's stuff from podcasts. And there are like videos and oral histories of things, of albums that we made and all type of stuff up there that is rare, exclusive. You can't get, oh, okay. So the last two updates, right? I just updated that space, brotherali.com/join, the caravan. We just updated the caravan with a series of radio ads that me and Ant did back in 2002, 2003. Some of the most embarrassing stuff that I've ever recorded. I just happened to come across it and I was like, you know what? I'm putting this out, but not for everybody, because you got to hear the context. There's the first track is me giving you the context. It's called Hear Me Out. It's like, all right, you know what I'm saying? Truth is here. The truth is here. Every word that I ever said is the truth, except for the time that I was selling jeans on the radio, doing urban radio fashion ads. You know what I'm saying? So that's something you're not going to find everywhere. And I don't think you can find it anywhere. But I came across it and I was like, you know what? I'm putting these up. I'm sharing these. I'm going to be vulnerable with the people that support us and the people that understand the context. But then we just last week launched something called The Vault. The Vault is basically, it's an ever-growing collection because we don't have them all. We didn't upload them all. But we started with 40 tracks, like four albums worth of songs. And this is everything from freestyles that I did on for like blogs. These are features that I've done. These are demos. So there's demos from the time when me and Ant were making the Undisputed Truth album, the Us album. There's demos from that time. And I'm going back and listening. BK had them on his computer. I didn't even know that I had them. I'd forgotten some of these things. But I'm like, yo, this song is dope. How come we didn't put this out? And for one reason or another, the conversation at that time was like, this isn't a song that we're going to put on this album. And it just never came out. And there's a few of those. And once we started thinking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, there's this and there's that. Some from Jake One, some from, you know, so there's stuff like that. Then there are versions of songs that I did for as like a guest, like I'm doing a feature, so I lay the beat or I lay the rhyme on the beat and then the artist changed the beat. So I'm sharing the original version, you know what I'm saying? Just with my subscribers, it's not out in the world. I'm not getting paid from it, but I'm sharing it on that platform. And then one of them in particular, and I'll share it on here. I don't usually talk about this, but I was asked to be on a Public Enemy song, which is a huge honor for me. It's one thing for Chuck to be on my songs. It's one thing for us to, you know, for him to do the hook on a song with me and Immortal Technique and Killer Mike. It's another thing for Public Enemy to say, will you be on the new Public Enemy album? Like that was huge. So I did it and I did this real intricate rhyme pattern. And this happens a lot. This has happened with me a couple of times. And it's happened with most rappers, I think. The engineer, you give them the vocals and they have to place it on the beat and they place it one beat off. So you're still rhyming on beat. It's not like you're off beat, but your rhymes aren't landing, your syllables and bars aren't landing at the place where you intend them to land. So to you, it's always gonna sound wrong. So that's what happened. And when it came out, I didn't hear it till it came out, and I hit up Public Enemy's like manager and engineer at that time. And I was like, yo, that's not how I meant my lyrics to be. Is it possible to change it? Because at that time it was only on streaming services. I don't think the physical one was out yet. So I'm like, on the streaming services, you can update the song. I'm like, could you just bump it back one, not even a bar, just a beat? And he was like, I could, but I know for a fact that Chuck loves your verse. And so I was like, can you please ask him? Because if I ask him, he might do it for me, because he knows the regard that I have for him. So he hit up Chuck and he came back. He's like, man, Chuck says he loves it like that. I'm like, cool. All right. You know what I mean? He's the teacher. I'm the student. I'm just happy to be here. It's great. You know what I mean? And like I said, it's not offbeat. But so even when we did a video for it, the song's called Get Up, Stand Up. Even when we went back and did the video for it, I had to try to mouth the words to my verse in a way that, like, for me as an MC, I'm hyper aware of where on the beat I'm at. So the version of it that we put up in the vault in the caravan is my version, the original way that I rap. You know what I'm saying? So you could hear that. And that's what it is. But man, so go to brotherali.com in the join section and get down with the caravan. Like, those are the people that really make this thing happen and keep it going. So we're very grateful to you all. I wanted to share, you know, we haven't had our typical production schedule for the podcast that we usually do, especially when I'm home. I've got a tour coming up. I'm going to be on tour with the Grouch and the entire Living Legends crew from just after Indigenous Peoples Day, which used to be called Thanksgiving. Some people probably still do call it Thanksgiving. I call it Indigenous Peoples Day. From then until just before Christmas. So we'll be on How the Grouch Stole Christmas. Is a tour that Grouch did every year, all the way up until the pandemic, and now he's just bringing it back. And it usually would be the Grouch and another underground headliner. And this year, he got the whole Living Legends crew together, and I'm the support. DJ Fresh is DJing. I mean, that joint is really going to be dope. And the Living Legends have a new album coming. They've dropped at least one of the songs. And so I'm really excited for that. I'm really very excited for that. You go to brotherali.com/events. You can see all of those. The ticket links are there. Get your tickets now, because historically, when we've done those tours in the past, things have sold out. But we're not on our typical schedule. Like, especially when we have a tour coming up, it's like, man, we better try to get a bunch of conversations recorded so that we can have enough for Brendan to edit and chop up and drop. To chop and drop before, you know, while I'm on tour. And there's been a few things going on that have kind of prevented that. One is that I'm trying to get new internet in my office. The internet and even the cell data reception in my neighborhood in Istanbul is a problem. There are places in Istanbul that have internet that's okay. But man, it's a challenge. And in our neighborhood in particular, the wiring was done back in the day. And so, the building that I'm in, like, I've gone to a couple different places now and they're like, we'll give you the best internet that the wiring for your building can handle. And I mean, I've even thought about, like, man, can we try to chip in with the other people in this building and get some better wiring up in here? Like, could we get it rewired? I've been here for 3 years now, like, coming up on 3 years, like, I'd love to get some proper internet jumping off, but it's gotten much worse and it's really a problem, you know. There's a hotel across the street from my office studio, and this hotel used to be a hospital, and so they have great wiring over there. They got great internet. And so there have been times when I've just got a room at the hotel across the street just so that I could use their Wi-Fi. But man, it's a problem. And then the other two things I just wanted to share that have been going on, part of the reason that I'm sitting down talking and we don't have a guest this week. One of the things is that people tell me there are people that listen to this podcast that these are their favorite episodes. And they tell me that all the time. Like, I love the intros. I got certain friends that only listen to the intros. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just love to connect. And like I said earlier, that's a big part of what I'm here for. So for me, whether I'm connecting with a guest for you to listen in on, or if I'm sitting just talking to you, to me, it's all the same. The connecting is what it's about for me. But this week we had some really powerful things happen. And in a way, they kind of remind me of each other. So I just wanted to, if it's okay, share these stories with you. The first is that my daughter, I have a 15-year-old daughter. I have three daughters. My 15-year-old daughter grew up in South Minneapolis with her dad being Brother Ali. She went to the best public elementary school in the state. Really special, beautiful situation. We love the school that she went to, especially while she was going there. There's all different people there now. But while she was going there, I mean, it's on an acre of land. They do urban farming. They have special programs for kids with special needs. It's a Somali magnet program. So, you know, my daughter, both of her parents are converts. Like, my wife's black and Puerto Rican. I'm European American. So my daughter is a Muslim, but like ethnically, you know, it's culturally it's difficult. And especially living in Minnesota, like Muslims are a minority in Minnesota. And so she went to a school with all of these black and brown Muslim girls, these Somali girls and kids in general. So there was nothing weird about her being Muslim. Matter of fact, like, you know, my wife wears hijab and our family is kind of Orthodox. And so we thought at some point, once she got closer to becoming a young lady, we'd probably have this conversation about hijab. And she would wear it to the mosque and she wears it when we pray and things like that. But we weren't really trying to force the issue. Somali girls wear the hijab really young. It's just part of their culture. There's different things like that are cultural. So like Turkish girls, for example, in Turkey, it's really rare for young girls to wear the hijab. And even sometimes religious Turks don't like it when little girls wear hijab. Like sometimes they'll stop you in the street if your daughter wears a hijab outside. And they'll just be like, no, that's too young. Like, let her play and let her be a kid. It's just different cultural situations. But so religious Somalis anyway, it's changing a little bit now, but for the most part, Somalis girls start wearing the hijab really young. So our daughter came home in first grade and she was like, I'm the only Muslim girl at school that doesn't wear hijab to school. So we were like, okay. She's like, so can I wear my hijab to school? She's like, yeah, you know? And so it was never a conversation. But then also, I mean, she skateboards and she's into records and she's into like really eclectic music and, you know, she's into theater and, you know, photography, and she's just a dope kid. She's really dope kid. And she had this really eclectic group of friends that was really amazing, and they were together and it was dope. And then when the pandemic happened, that was really challenging. And then also there was a cancel culture thing that happened in Minnesota with the artist in Minnesota. And I wasn't really named in it specifically, but I also wasn't removed. But they're just this kind of overall distrust. Like the hip hop artists in Minneapolis were heroes for a long time. And I don't know what it's like now because I haven't lived there since this thing happened. This thing happened during the pandemic and then we left in the middle of the pandemic. So I don't know what it's like now. But I know that there was a time when we couldn't leave our house without somebody telling her dad how great he was and what a good person he was and how important and influential and beneficial to the community he was. That was my daughter's experience. We were never rich, but also like economically, we're the same as everybody else that she goes to school with for the most part. Like everybody is living a simple and comfortable life. Where in Minnesota, in South Minneapolis, in that group, you're not really trying to stunt on each other. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's trying to have the most expensive up-to-date car and all this kind of stuff. That's the culture there. And it's even more so that way here in Turkey, in Istanbul, and with the group that we live among. There are places on the European side where you can go and see a bunch of, you know, designer stuff and, you know, the shiniest new everything. Where we live, though, it's not like that. You know what I'm saying? So we love that. We don't want to be in a place where we got to compete with people about spending money and being better consumers and trying to stunt on each other. But in South Minneapolis, we had this life, and she had this group of friends that she had from kindergarten. And she had an understanding of herself and her family and what her family meant. And also, my wife and I were organizers in a Muslim community. We organized a Muslim community space of, it was called the Jamali Project. It was people who were exploring Islam, people who had converted to Islam, people who maybe grew up in Muslim families, but they also grew up culturally being connected to America and urban America specifically. And maybe they didn't grow up practicing Islam, or maybe they were just looking for some sort of communal place where their culture and their spirituality and their religion and their politics could all be together. And so me and my wife provided that. So for 5 years, we did this thing called the Jamali Project. We never advertised it. We never fundraised for it. We never got a single dollar from anybody. We didn't put it on social media. We didn't let people record. We didn't take pictures, no videos, no ad, nothing. No GoFundMe, none of that. No Launch Good, that's the Muslim GoFundMe. We never did any of that. And so that was a beautiful thing. And so that was another thing that we had. Like, we were really deeply rooted in the community. And then with the pandemic, all of that went away. And then we picked up and we moved to Istanbul in the middle of that. Now, for our littler daughters, they're just starting school. And so it's easy for them to learn Turkish. Like, one of our daughters is so, we just call her the Turk, man. Like, she is all about it. She loves, you know, Turkish food, Turkish culture. She told us that, you know, Turks love their flag. She told us that she wants to be an astronaut so that she can put a Turkish flag on the moon. It's like, all right, girl, that's about the most Turkish thing, yo. So, you know, so for them it's different. For the little ones, like, that's all they've known. We went back to America. We went to New York, where my wife's family is from, Minneapolis. We went to both places. And the second we landed in America, our five-year-old started freaking out. She's like, I don't want to be here. She's like, I want to go home. Like, to her, Turkey is home. Istanbul is home. And it was really weird to her. We had to tell her, like, you can't just eat whatever you want. Like, our family only eats halal meat. And so, like, you can't just eat whatever you want. You really can't eat whatever pizza you want. Because, you know, in Muslim countries, they got halal beef, pepperoni, and sausage, and hot dogs, and all the stuff. It's all halal. Even hamburgers. Like, we wouldn't go to a hamburger place in America and just eat a hamburger. We wouldn't eat a chicken wing. Like, it's got to be halal or kosher. So, like, you know, in America, like, they don't understand that. So we had to tell them and explain to them, like, they eat stuff in America that we don't eat and all this stuff. And she just was like, I don't want to be here. I'm not, you know. And then she got with her cousins and it was all over. Once she got with her cousins, it was like, okay, this is great. I love this place. But yeah, man, but for my 15-year-old, she moved to a place where, you know, she went from being very, very, very at home and feeling really in a context where she made sense and where the person that she had become, she was somebody. And she even was an organizer at that time too. Like, man, she went to the public library. And there was a period of her life where she was really into Harry Potter. And so they had a Harry Potter club advertised. And she went there and she's like, everybody here is white and they're all boys. You know what I'm saying? And she's this like brown, racially mixed Muslim girl. And so she went in there and now she's cool being there, but she knows a lot of her friends aren't going to go there and they're not going to feel welcome. You know what I mean? And even if people treat her weird, she's so secure with herself, even as a little kid, that she's like, I'm cool with it. But she's like, this is something that everybody, I know a lot of kids that love Harry Potter that would love to be in a Harry Potter club. And so her and my wife made flyers for Harry Potter Club. And she went very specifically and gave them to all her friends, but to make sure that there's girls in there, to make sure that there were, you know, people from the different cultures that she interacts with, you know what I mean? Black and brown girls and her other friends too, everybody, to make sure that this, and so you just see the whole look of Harry Potter Club start to change. She's always been like that. And she gets that from me and her mom. You know, that's the type of people that we are. So she really felt very, very deeply connected and contextualized. And I think like her sense of self was really, and so when we came to Turkey, she has tried as much as possible to keep in touch with her friends, and to a certain degree they do, but it's like she's not part of their life anymore. And that group of friends, they split up anyway. They went to different schools, and now they all have their own things. So it's not like that group of friends still exists and she's just not in anymore. But she loves music, and music is her big refuge. Music is her safe space. It's really important to her. And like I said, she skateboards and does all this dope. So she's just so dope. She's a dope, dope, dope kid. And we love her so much. And, you know, when you have like a teenage daughter like that, it's like, I wish I could help you, but I can't be your peer. I can't create a peer group for you. You know what I mean? We could support and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, one of the groups that she's liked from the time she's young, I love, like, she doesn't like the same music as me. She's not a hip hop head, but all the music that she likes, I respect all of it. Easily. Like, she's a big like Beatles fan, and the Gorillaz, and like all this stuff that I'm like, yes, dope. I love that you love that music. And she listens to it on vinyl. She's got a record collection. It's dope. But when she was in elementary school with that group of friends, they fell in love with Imagine Dragons. And I'm always like, man, I'm not mad at Imagine Dragons. You know what I'm saying? I don't need to like everything she likes, but I've always just kind of been, there's something about that, like the dude in Imagine Dragons, like he very clearly is trying to rap sometimes, but it's just like, look at me, shook at me, took at me, took it. And I'm just like, nah, man, come on. That's not good. That's not it, you know? But there was one period in particular where my wife, while my wife was in school, she's a therapist, I say it all the time. While my wife she was in school, she finished her bachelor's degree and did her master's degree in a 1 year master's program. So she had like a 3 year period where school was really intense for her. She was also an intern. Logic has a song where he talks about the suicide hotline. So when my wife was an intern, like getting, registered, licensed to be a therapist, while she was going through that, she was the person, one of the people that would answer the phone on that hotline. And so when Logic came for sound set, she got to talk to him about that. And shout to Logic. He's a good, very cool person. But so this was an immensely, and then also during that time, she was pregnant with our two youngest daughters. So crazy and helping. I mean, it just was nuts. And I was on tour a lot of that time, very difficult. But anyway, so when women are pregnant, they don't fast Ramadan. And then we also have an elder son who had moved out. And that was another big change for my daughter, because she grew up with her big brother, but then he became an adult and moved out. So like she's been through a lot of change, a lot of loss. So anyway, the year that my son moved out, me and my daughter, we were the only ones fasting in the house. And so we would get up in the morning, and during Ramadan, I was like, all right, I'm gonna do everything I can to make this special. So what's a special breakfast that I can make? And so I learned how to make crepes, and I would make crepes. I had a special pan for it. I got it down pat because I was doing it every morning, and fruit and all this stuff. Excuse me. So we would get up in the morning, and we were like 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning. Just me and her, because we're the only ones fasting. She also started fasting really young. And again, that was her choice. But a lot of Muslim kids, they want to fast. My five-year-old is like, Daddy, I'm fasting Ramadan this year. I'm like, girl, you're 5 years old and she's really skinny. I'm like, I don't know if you're going to make it. Like, you might need to eat something. But we'll see. But I'm saying, if a kid is like, no, we're fasting, this is what we're doing, I want to be part of this, you know? So, and you'll find a lot of Muslims that, even if they're not observant, even if they don't pray throughout the year, maybe they got, a girlfriend or a boyfriend and they smoke and drink and go clubbing and whatever they do. Like, you'll find a lot of Muslims that otherwise aren't that observant. When Ramadan comes, it's one of the most beautiful experiences that a person could have. And so people want to fast. So my daughter was fasting. We used to call it fasty face. Like, so she would fast some days and not other days. And I'd be like, are you fasty face today? She'd be like, yeah, I'm fasty face. All right, you're fasty face. I mean, she's fasting. So she would get up, we would make crepes and listen to Imagine Dragons. And their songs, it's like, they have kind of a non-specific, but like just generally generic kind of religious undertone. So to be a believer, you know, they got one of their big songs is Believer and stuff like that. And I think they maybe come from like Mormon or Seventh-day Adventist or something kind of background. Maybe I'm not sure. But you know, I'm like not mad at this music in terms of the subject and the themes and stuff like that. So I'm like, all right, but she loves it. You know what I mean? But aesthetically, it wasn't speaking to me. It's a type of music that was not made for me. It's made for people who kind of like rock, kind of like hip hop. It's stadium music. I'm not a big fan of stadium music usually. I like intimate music. You know what I'm saying? It's just not my thing, but I'm like, she loves it. So word. So that means I love it. So, you know, she's having a tough year this year. We're in Turkey and it's just not easy and stuff. And so my wife says, Imagine Dragons is going on tour. I said, okay. And we looked at the dates and it turns out that they were coming to Athens, Greece, which is just about like an hour long flight from Istanbul. Like Athens to Istanbul is like Minneapolis to Chicago. It's nothing. It's like right next door. Like so much of Turkey used to be Greece and vice versa. So like, yo, this is crazy. Dope. All right. And her birthday was coming up and it just so happened that her birthday coincided with Eid, with the end of Ramadan. So it's like, imagine if one year your birthday and Christmas or Kwanzaa or whatever big holiday you celebrate for gifts, your birthday that year just happened to be the same day. So it's like, oh my, all right. So we got her some dope gifts. Like we really hooked her up. And that was the last one. My wife went and like designed a ticket that looked like a boarding pass to Athens. And so she opens it and it's like an envelope and she's like, and it said, you know, our names and it's like going to Athens. And so she's like, oh, me and daddy are going to go to Athens. Oh, that's kind of cool. You know, she's like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then she's like, flip it over and you flip it over and it's an Imagine Dragons ticket. And she cried and she's not a crier. And so we were just so much looking forward to it. And then we got a notice that her passport is about to expire. I forgot that when somebody is under 18, the passport's only good for 5 years. And we got to renew it so that we can renew our residency in Turkey anyway. So I'm like, okay, so we go online, did a bunch of research. We figured out that if we travel with our passport and our Turkish residency cards, we should be good. So we're kind of rolling the dice. So we get up the day of the show and we have an early morning flight. I'm like, all right, hopefully we'll be cool with our travel. And I booked everything. I'm good at booking travel because I travel so much. So we got up, got on our flight. It's just me and her. We're chilling, just kicking it. You know what I mean? We get in. And the show is at the Olympic Auditorium, like the original Olympic Auditorium. Not the one in Atlanta, which is dope, but the original, where the original Olympics took place. It's a big sports complex with all of these venues. So we get over there and they're starting to talk about storms and, you know, I'm looking on the app to see what's going on and it turns out there's gonna be very serious storms, storm warnings. So I'm like, okay, is this show indoors or outdoors? We get out there. And our hotel, you could see the Olympic Stadium from where we were in our hotel. And you go over there. And as we're walking there, it's starting to rain. And we get out there and I realize that it's standing only. And it's almost in like what would feel like a parking lot. It's in the Olympic complex. But I think they might have sold less tickets than they anticipated. My booking agent was saying that, you know, really what's going on is a downturn overall globally in the economies of the world. Like everybody in the world, most economies in the world are having huge downturns. And so what's the case or the trend across all of the kind of music industry is that there's these big groups and stars that have fandoms that are like a culture of fans. So like BTS and K-pop, you know, all of these, like these big, like Beyonce and Taylor Swift, like these people's tickets are way up, and the cost of them is way up. And there's like a whole kind of like subculture that you're part of if you're their fans. But everybody else is struggling. Like those things are way up. You know what I mean? And we were talking about it. It's almost like, man, people need such an escape nowadays. That going to a huge arena where you're experiencing public joy in a big group of, in a big collective group of people, whether it's BTS singing what they're singing about, or, you know, Taylor Swift singing what she's singing about, Beyonce singing about what she's singing about. It's a very powerful experience that people need in their souls, because people don't have religious spaces, the political thing. Like, people need to be together in these celebratory ways. There's just part of what the human being needs. So you can critique everything until it doesn't exist anymore, which is what postmodernity does. Like, nothing's good enough. Everything's so problematic that it needs to be dismantled. And like, a lot of what was built in the generations before us should be replaced, no doubt. But not everything everywhere, you know? But so people are just missing this stuff. And so that's what these big fandom things are giving people. But then people don't have as much money to go to movies. So when people do go to movies, there's gotta be a superhero. There's gotta be explosions. There's gotta be, the world has to blow up and then be saved. It's like, you got to give me some very supernatural, larger than life experience, because just the regular day-to-day life isn't gonna cut it anymore. And all musicians are feeling it. Everybody, I don't care what they say. If you're not a super, if you don't have a super fandom, you're selling less tickets than you used to sell. It's just the case across the board for everybody. And so I think maybe this, and Imagine Dragons is a huge band. Like, they're huge globally. And so we got there, and I think maybe it might have gotten moved to a different space. I don't know. But it's standing room only, and it's really raining very hard. And we're outdoors, and there's no cover over the stage. There's no cover over anything. And I'm just like, man, I was very close to people that were putting on a festival for a long time. One time on Soundset, I was hosting Soundset. Lupe Fiasco was on stage, and we had to interrupt his set to say, there's a tornado coming. Soundset's over, go home. And then we all went to, Atmosphere hadn't played yet, so we all went over to First Avenue, and Atmosphere played their set at First Ave. It ended up being pretty epic. And Lupe just happened to be singing a song about the rain, which is pretty dope. But I'm like, man, this doesn't look good. And this means so much to this girl. And I'm praying, like, please Allah, you know, whatever you wrote for this situation is right. And I'm asking, this show means a lot to her. It means a lot to our family. You know, this is like, she's holding on to something that really means something to her. And so we're sitting here, and it's, the rain's getting worse and worse. And then an unannounced opener comes on, and I feel so bad. I think it's MJR or AJR. I'm sorry, y'all. I should have looked it up before I started talking. I think it's MJR. It's a pop band, and they're from New York, and they were really good. Especially for pop music. I'm like, this is really good. I'm really feeling it. But one of his lines is, 100 bad days made 100 great stories. 100 great stories made me popular at parties. I think that's the line. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this is something. So it's just raining, raining, raining. And all these people brought their umbrellas to stand in a crowd. And like, they're not standing in the back. So I'm like, okay, I mean, and these umbrellas are just in the way. They're poking each other with umbrellas. My daughter's tall. So I'm like, okay, my job at this show is gonna be block the umbrellas so they don't poke my daughter in the eye and so that she can see. So I'm just standing there just very clearly and unapologetically pushing people's umbrellas out. Just got my arms up around my daughter like a goalpost. Just like, nope, you're not blocking her vision and you're not gonna accidentally poke my baby in the eye with your umbrella. I think it's very rude to have an umbrella. We're standing there with raincoats on and the hoods up. But I mean, at this point, we're soaked all the way down to our socks and we're standing up to our ankles in water. It's raining really seriously. And it looks like the show is gonna go on. And then as soon as the openers got off stage, and the openers were dope, and my daughter likes them. So we're like, okay. Soon as they got done, it started lightning, like really bad. And, you know, I'm like, oh, dude. Like once the electrical part starts, that's when you got an issue. And so they make an announcement. Of course, it's in Greek. We're in Greece. They make an announcement in Greek, and it's just like, so I'm hearing all this stuff, and I keep hearing security, security, security. Like, man, this is not good. And you just see people's faces. And then somebody tried to translate it to English, and it was kind of broken. But it basically what they said is, we're evacuating the venue. And so we start leaving. Me and my daughter are just like, man. While this group was on stage, the openers, I remember saying to her, I was like, man, this show is amazing. If this was for the, we didn't pay a lot. It wasn't very expensive to go to the show. So I was like, man, if we paid this amount and just saw this band, that would be enough for me for what we paid. And she was like, yeah. And I think we both might've been thinking that might be what's happening here. So I say, we're evacuating. I'm like, okay. And so we start leaving. And like I said, we're sloshing through puddles up to our ankles. And I said to my daughter, you know, we start talking and she's kind of laughing and she's not fake. And she said, I'm worried about mommy. She's like, because mommy was so happy that we were doing this. She was worried about her mother being disappointed. And then I said, you know, it's interesting, this thing about 100 bad days made 100 great stories. I'm like, this is one of those times. I'm like, the story of this is cooler than the story of, oh, we went and saw a concert one time. She was like, yeah. Like she, and we talked about the spiritual side of it. I was like, you know, Allah has known what would happen in his creation since before. We experience it in a linear way. Allah doesn't create it that way. Allah's knowledge of every single thing that would happen and every single possibility of what could have happened to infinity, Allah's knowledge of all of that is perfect and his knowledge is everlasting before beginning or end. So it's not like this, Allah has always known what would happen, what the truth would be and what would unfold, you know? And she's like, yeah, I know. And I was like, we're gonna see Imagine Dragons. Like I am giving you my vow. We are gonna see Imagine Dragons. And when I tell you she was not disappointed, she wasn't hurt, she wasn't mad, she went straight to acceptance in a way that was so inspiring to me. I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, I sit up here and talk about the spiritual path to people. And what I'm seeing in this 15-year-old girl right now is something that I aspire to. You're talking about radical acceptance, man. Like, but she also was not denying any of her feelings. You know what I mean? It's just like the full presence of, I was really looking forward to this. I really wanted to see this, but it's not meant to be. And we don't always get everything we want. And this is after years of her going through so much loss and so much adjustment. And as a parent, you're like, man, I know she's gonna land somewhere good and it might just be 6 months away. But when you're a teenager and you don't have a friend group like that, it feels like a lifetime. It feels like infinity. It feels like you're just in an ocean that you're never gonna get out of. And like, I feel like, and she knew that me and her mom wanted this for her. Like me and my wife wanted this for her. And that was her first thought. I'm the person that this is happening to, so I can accept it. But I know that mommy's, it's going to be hard for mommy. She really was, she almost cried because she's like, mommy's going to be so hurt. I remember when my mom died, I told Aunt. Aunt was the only person that I like really said it to in that way. And he cried. And this is old school Aunt. You saw on the podcast, you saw Aunt now. This is like, you know, got children and been sober and been through therapy. And you're seeing therapy Aunt. You're seeing well, whole, sober, well Aunt. This is old school Aunt. And he cried and he was like, man, he said, you know, not that he would wish his mother to die, but he's like, I wish it could be me instead of you because I could handle it. He's like, it hurts so much for me to see you go through this. And my daughter was feeling that. She was like, I'm the one going through it. So it's fine. She actually was like, she would rather have something difficult happen to her than happen to somebody else. Because she's like, I know I can do it. She's like, mommy knowing I'm going through this is the problem. So we're leaving the concert. We're wet. And we're just kind of like looking at other people, and there are other people that obviously traveled to this show. It's a destination kind of. And we're all the way out of the venue, and we can still kind of hear them making announcements. And we hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, what? And it just stopped raining. And it was clear. And I was like, damn it, they could have still done the show. Because I know that feeling too. When you call something off and then it still could have happened. And you're like, man, when you're in the shoes of trying to make a call like that, do we call this off or do we go ahead and do it? Because if you choose wrong on either side, if it's like you go ahead and do it and then somebody gets hit by lightning, or the show goes bad, or a speaker goes out, or, you know what I'm saying, something goes wrong, then you're like, man, we should have called this off. But likewise, if you call it off and then it stops raining, you're like, we could have done the show. Both of those are horrible feelings. So as we're walking away, the sky clears up, as storms often do. And I'm like, man, damn it, they could have done the show. So we hear them announcing, da 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 da. I'm just hearing it at a distance, and then we hear him say in English, Imagine Dragons. Dude, we ran back in there. We had wristbands, you know, so they were just letting everybody back in. Like the people that were at the gates were like, go, 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 go in, go in, go in. Like if somebody was standing outside without tickets, they got in the show. But they're just like, go, go, go. We went in there, y'all, and we watched them do the dopest shit. It is one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. First of all, the singer came out in some short shorts, like above the knee, not like, you know, but like above his knee, and some Vans and no shirt. Like he just came out with no shirt. It's not like one of those, like, you know, halfway through so-and-so is going to take their shirt off. LL's going to take a shirt off or something. This is like, this dude came out with no shirt on. Like, this is me. Get used to it from the beginning. And I know he struggled with his voice, and I've struggled with my voice. I think he might, I don't know if he had the operation or what, but they actually canceled this tour the first time or rescheduled it because of his voice. He came out his first note, wow, killing. I mean, the lights were amazing. His voice was amazing. His presentation was amazing. They were playing these little like cinematic theatrical vignettes in between the performance to like tie the whole concept of the show together. The whole thing was about the state of the world being messed up. And it's pop, it's a pop version. And in pop, a lot of times they're not specific because they leave it open for anybody to be able to read their own meaning into stuff. They just give you the broadest strokes and themes possible, which I understand. That's what pop is. That's how you appeal to the largest group possible. Or you get oddly specific, which is what Jay-Z has been able to do somehow. Like somehow Jay-Z made a very specific story of a kid from Bed-Stuy whose dad left and sold drugs and, you know what I'm saying, got rich being an independent rapper. Somehow he's made that a universal story. Genius. Go ahead, man. But man, these guys, this thing was incredible. The story was like, the world is a very, very difficult place to live in. and you're valuable and you deserve to be healthy. He talked a lot about suicide and mental health and things like that. I mean, they had cameras showing the audience. It was one of the most well-executed, impressive, most flawless performances I've ever seen. He came out and he had the two X's on his hands, which is like an old school punk rock thing that means you're straight edge. You know what I'm saying? It's like, no, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I'm sober. So, you know, as a Muslim, I'm feeling that. You know what I mean? The dude on stage with his shirt off with my 15-year-old daughter, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to have to accept this part. This is just what's happening right now. You know what I'm saying? But the messages of all of this music, I'm like, man, I really am happy about the messages, you know? Like, I'm looking at a human being, and I think they're maybe from Vegas, and I'm looking at these dudes, and even the parts where he's doing those, look at me, shook at me, took at me, fuck at me. I'm like, you know what, though? Man, he's delivering these lines, man, in ways that a lot of great rappers might struggle to do. And it's funny because whenever somebody's not your favorite, Evan has told me this when I first met him, I was telling him there's a particular hip hop producer that I really can't stand. And he makes big hit records and stuff. It's just somebody I don't like, doesn't matter who it is. But Evan was like, man, never say that about super famous people because you might meet them and they might actually be your fan. He's like, that particular dude might be your fan. I've never met that dude, but I have met people that weren't my favorite and they've been like, yo, Brother Ali. I'd be like, what? Like, man, you know, not saying this is true of Justin Timberlake, but I wouldn't have expected Justin Timberlake to know my music. And he jumped on stage when I was performing. And then afterwards was like, man, I'm a big fan. And da-da-da. It's like, wow, it's crazy. So I'm looking at these guys. I'm like, man, there's a chance these guys might know me or know Atmosphere or Aesop Rock. In fact, I'm almost positive they do. Their age and their type of rapping they're trying to do, they're familiar with me and my friends. So anyway, but I'm watching this thing and I'm like, this is incredible. And then at the end, they end with this beautiful song and he's talking about suicide and depression. And I'm sitting there with my daughter who's like, man, you have every reason to be depressed. You know, it's been a very difficult couple of years. Like she was so happy with what she thought life was and who she thought she was in it. And that all got pulled out from under her. And the fact that I can be like, hey, moving to Turkey felt like the best thing. She can understand that. I think she believes it. And I don't think she's mad at me. I don't think, you know, but still it's like, dude, And so he sings this beautiful song about just like you're valuable and people love you. And like, no matter how dark it gets, people love you. And I'm crying, thinking about it. And I was standing there crying. I'm standing there, a 45-year-old man, underground hip hop head. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, me and Merce and Pharoah Monch and, you know, Immortal Technique. Like these are my friends, you know? And I'm sitting here watching this show and I'm like, I know this is pop music. I know this is all orchestrated, but there's truth here. And this guy is standing on stage and he's talking about friends that he lost. And I'm like, man, I know that's true. It's very, very true. I was feeling it. And it was executed so beautifully. And even with me knowing all the tricks that go into something like that, I'm just like, damn, this is beautiful. And I started crying, man. I'm sitting there and I'm just hugging my daughter. And I was just thanking her. I was like, thank you for letting me come to this with you. Thank you for sharing this with me. Even though I bought the tickets and flies to Greece and everything. I'm just like, thank you. I'm sitting there hugging her and I'm crying. And I don't know if she's crying or not, but I'm crying. And all of a sudden, a full fireworks show just goes off. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, man, it was amazing. And then we realized at the end of the day, we hadn't eaten anything all day. So we walked back to our hotel. There were no Ubers. And so we had to walk back. You could see it. You could see the stadium from our hotel, but it still was a few miles. So we had to walk a few miles in the wet rain back to the hotel. We get back to the hotel late at night. I had to figure out how to sign up for their version of Uber Eats, or like in Istanbul, we have Yemeksepeti, you know what I'm saying? Grubhub or whatever. I had to like figure out, had to use the translate app, taking screenshots to like sign up for it. It's all in Greek. Had to like verify my PayPal and my credit card. And like, it took like 40 minutes to be able to get to a place where I could just order us pizza. And man, we took showers and got dry and just sat there eating pizza. It was one of the best experiences of my life, man. And I hope she remembers that, you know, and I know she will. And then the next day we got up and we went to the Acropolis, which is the hill where the Parthenon is and a number of other things. We went up there and took pictures and we went to we did the tourist stuff. We just straight up did tourist stuff. And it was dope. And so that's one of the reasons why we weren't, you know, why we don't have a guest this week. I've been doing the family thing. The other one is that BK1 has been training for a marathon. Last year, you know, BK is one of the most disciplined people that I know. The producer of his podcast, my first DJ. Go listen to the episode with BK. But BK had been training for a marathon. And last year at this time, he was talking to me about setting goals. You set yearly goals. And he said he's got a whole system that he follows. And it's one of the things that makes him so beneficial to me is because, you know, I'm an artist and I don't say that as an excuse, but it's also true that I'm not the most organized, disciplined, regimented person. You know, I'm all, my primary like day-to-day teacher, sheikh, guide, Dr. Omar Farouk Abdullah, he's not responsible for any of my mistakes. But he says to me, he says, you're always doing something good. Always, every time I check in with you, you're always doing something good. You're always learning something. You're always working on something. You're always developing something. You're always doing something good. But he said, you're almost never doing the thing you're supposed to do. Whatever is at the top of your list, you're almost never doing that thing. He's like, that's your little rebellion. And he's right. He's 100% right. If I'm supposed to be working on my albums, suddenly I want to make, if I'm supposed to like work on a new album where I'm rapping, suddenly I got I got to scratch the itch to make beats. If I'm supposed to be doing that, suddenly I want to start editing video. If I'm supposed to be doing that, suddenly I want to do a Brother Minister freestyle. If I'm supposed to be doing that, suddenly I got this new idea to launch this new thing. I want to do a podcast. If I'm supposed to be working on the podcast, suddenly I just remembered I'm supposed to be working on this album. Same thing with studying. I'm going to study theology. I'm going to take the next 3 months, I'm going to do this in-depth theology course. Suddenly, I'm super interested in Arabic. If I'm supposed to be studying Arabic, suddenly I want to know the history of the Ottoman Empire. Always doing something good, almost never doing the thing I'm actually supposed to be doing, which is why I need partners in what I do. Because like, if I have a partner, I'm not going to let my partner down. Like if I have BK1 and so I choose partners also that like they're disciplined. You know what I mean? When me and Evidence were working together, we just had to say, both of us are, he's a little bit more steady than me because he doesn't have as many things. He raps and he makes beats. Those are the things he does. So he's going to be doing one of those things every day. You know what I'm saying? But with us, we had to set a date where it was like, this is the day we turn this album in because it's going to come out. We have a tour. When we made an album together, Secrets and Escapes. If you haven't heard, go check it out. So we had to set a date in order to make sure that we stayed on track. So BK is really great about, you set a yearly goal. You also, in that goal, you have quarterly goals, you have monthly goals, you have weekly goals, you have daily goals. You make them something that is realistic, but it stretches you. It's just slightly beyond what you think you're capable of doing. And that's the way that you make sure that you are really moving forward, that these goals are really moving you in the right direction. So BK last year ran a long distance. I can't remember if it was half a marathon, I can't remember. But he ran some very impressive distance. And so he said that when he made his goal for 2023, he's like, I wanted to do something bigger, but I couldn't figure out where to go, like what goal to set. And so he's like, something inside me just said, you know what? I'm gonna run a marathon. He's never done anything like this. He's not an athletic person. He's not incapable, but I'm saying like, it's not like, you know, he played basketball or ran track or something like that. Like he's not an athletic person. He's a guy that goes to the gym, you know what I'm saying? But like, he's not an athletic person. Now that I think about it, he rode a bike for a very long time. Well, like before he had kids, he rode his bike everywhere, even through the winter in Minneapolis. So that actually is a pretty athletic thing now that I think about it. But he's not a standard athletic person, but he's disciplined. And so he got an app that broke down. You can put in, this is the date that my marathon is. And then, so it tells you, this week, these are your runs. This is how long you need to run. And he did it in an extremely disciplined, diligent way. And he kept it, even though his family, they live a really simple life. The one thing they save and spend their money on is to take their kids and to travel. So they want to have different experiences. They want to go to different cultures, different climates. Sometimes they'll take vacations with other families because they want to invest in those like long-term relationships or like their extended families, things like that. They saved up their money. He took his kids to Italy because his lineage is in Italy. And so part of his thing about the idea of getting out of the idea of being white is like white is a bill of goods that was sold to us so that European people lost their actual real connection with their culture. So he's like, I'm going to take my kids and show them Italy. Like, we're not, on paper and in the political system that we're in, we're white. So we're going to be responsible for that. But who we really are is like, we come from a people that have culture and history. And so, you know, neither he or his wife make a whole lot of money, but they're very disciplined. So they saved their money. They took their kids to Italy. You know what I'm saying? They've been to a bunch of dope places, Brazil, Spain, all this stuff. So even while they were traveling all year, this dude got his runs in different places all over. You know what I'm saying? Would get up and do his run. And that was his alone time. That was, he got kids. He's got a big schedule. He does his podcast. He does a lot of stuff. But this is what he's dedicating all of his free time to. And he kept hitting these milestones, We were just together in LA and in Oakland, and dude went out and got his runs in. I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? I'm waking up early in the morning to pray, but then after that, prayer takes 10 minutes. Like I might go back to bed. I might drink some coffee. This dude is like, he's out there getting it. So the marathon was today. And just keeping up with him, it's been incredibly inspiring just to see somebody be this disciplined. This morning, he gets an email that says, well, it's a little hotter in Minnesota than we're used to, so the marathon's canceled. Just canceled. Not rescheduled for tomorrow. Not next week. The marathon's just not happening. There's people that flew to town for it. And I'm saying, too hotter than usual means it's just barely made it into the 80s. It's not 115 degrees. It's 80-something degrees. They just canceled this thing that this guy's been training for all year. This dude has been training for this thing since New Year's Eve. Just canceled. It's not happening. So my dude, my friend, my brother, one of the dearest friends in my whole life, this guy was like, you know what? I'm running this marathon today. I'm just going to go out, and there's lakes in Minnesota and there's lakes that connect to each other. And he's like, I'm doing this marathon by myself. Now, when you run a marathon, one of the things about it, and a particular one that he signed up for, is like you go through really cool, there's a route and there's, you know, 200 other people out there and you're all doing it together. And there's a sense of togetherness and maybe even a sense of camaraderie or even competition. And there's other people out there that are cheering everybody on. Like they're out there because their uncle's running, but they're also cheering everybody on. You know what I'm saying? You run through cool neighborhoods. You run in Minnesota, Minneapolis, South Minneapolis. Like South Minneapolis means a lot to the people that live there. And so he's like, you know, you're going to go through these cool neighborhoods. You're going to go by the lakes. You're going to go by the river. You're going to see all this cool nature stuff. And then at the end, when you get to the end, they're going to take your picture. They're going to put a medal on you all the way along. There's going to be stands with first aid. There's going to be stands for hydration, stations set up throughout the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? You're going to do this with a big group of people. My dude is like, no, I'm doing this myself. I set this goal for myself and I am not robbing myself of this just because these people canceled this marathon. So he made it known to his friend group that were supporting him. Hey, the marathon is canceled for them, but not for me. I'm going to go and run. And so one of the homies, a guy that I don't really know yet, but this makes me want to know him even more. If you look at on brotherali.com, we did a jacket and shirts for Uncle Sam Goddamn, 15th year anniversary of Uncle Sam Goddamn. So these really dope, like hand style, it's like these black coaches jackets that say, "Welcome to the United Snakes, land of the thief, home of the slave." Super dope. There's only a few of them left. We sold through most of them last year for the anniversary. There's a few of them left on brotherali.com. Go check it out. In that, you know, we had people like model them, like put them on and like show them. So there's like a number of people. There's like the white dude in that group of people. That's this guy who's friends with BK was like, you know what? Today was my day to be with my baby, but I'm going to reach out. He said, I bet my mother-in-law will watch the baby. He got his mother-in-law to watch his baby. And he's like, I'm going to load up a bag with all the hydration stuff that you need, all the first aid stuff that you might need. And you don't have to look at me, talk to me. You put in your earbuds, listen to your music, listen to your podcast, audio books, whatever you run to. I'm going to ride my bike behind you and just support you so that you got somebody out there with you. So BK1 is out there right now as I record this, running a marathon by himself. That's the kind of people you want in your life. They're hella rare. They're extremely rare. They're extremely profoundly rare. And especially as an artist, if you got somebody like that in your life that is disciplined, that you can try to gain some inspiration from, you know what I'm saying? Like somebody taking away all my lies that I tell myself and proving my lies that I tell myself to not be true. It's a really very, very beautiful thing. So this is what's going on in our world. Between the Wi-Fi, between going to Greece, to Athens, and between BK training for a marathon, the marathon gets canceled, so he's running it by himself. Like a marathon on its own is one of the huge, like that's an accomplishment for somebody like P. Diddy. You know what I'm saying? Puffy went out there and ran a marathon. I remember thinking, damn, okay, Puffy. But man, this guy BK is trained for it by himself, not with a coach. There's no one running next to him going, let's go, champ. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure Puffy had help. This dude, BK is just out there. It's like, no, I made a promise to myself and I'm going to do it. And he's got a million things he could do. You know what I'm saying? Like Dr. Omar told me, you're always doing something good. It's very easy for me to say, well, I'm not rapping right now, but I'm making beats. This is part of my thing. And I've made hundreds of beats that there's no reason. Ant always tells me, stop making beats. Everybody makes beats. You're good at making beats. Like you're getting better and better. It's like, yeah, you're good. And there's times where he'll even be like, hey, can you try to do the bass line for this? Or, you know, recently he was like, hey, yeah, you know, he'll be like, we just released a song together last year called Going Through It, where Ant gave me a beat. I wrote a song. We liked the song, but he's like, man, these drums just suck to me. I don't like the drums. And he's like, I can't figure out another direction to go with the drums. So I went in there and chopped up a break and redid the drums and put an 808 with it, stuff that he wouldn't have done. He's like, yo, that's dope. So it's the first ever. Actually, there's one other song that me and Ant produced together. I think I actually played the bass line on something back in the day too. We had a song called Sleepwalker back in like 2004, I think, that I played the bass on it. Cause I was showing him the notes. I'm like, no, it's this. Do, 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 do. He's like, you just play. He's like, this is how you record on the ASR. You know, but he's like, dude, you don't need to make beats. He's like, you're one of the most unique MCs there's ever been. As a beat maker, you're good. Like you're good. He's like, you're good. Like you can say you're a producer, you're good, but you should be putting your time into rhyming. You should be rapping. You should be writing songs. You should be doing that every day. He's like, I think that's all you should do. He's like, you can do everything. He's supportive of it all, He's like, man, just rap every day. If you did what Slug does, which is just get up and rap every single day, what Black Thought does, he's like, you will be as successful as them if you just get up and do it every single day. I can't. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know. I don't know why. Because there are other things in me that really cry out, but also there's something about keeping a promise to ourselves that is a signal of where we're really at and what we really believe about ourselves. And so being able to have somebody like BK in my life and seeing him do that, it's really moving. It's really inspiring. And so I'm grateful, because when people do that, like that's a type of leadership. You make a really difficult commitment to yourself. And when you look at that, the knowledge that I have, to me, it's beyond belief. But the divine is writing everything. And the divine always knew what would be written from before, for always. And so this idea that for Brendan to say, I'm going to run a marathon and I'm not going to have a trainer and I'm not going to have I'm just going to do it. And then to go through the entire process being really busy and having a really busy family. Like, his wife is a huge leader in the Twin Cities community. His wife is a really serious person, and she's very busy. She gives a lot of her life to her family, but also a lot of her life to the community. And it is deeply impactful. And Brendan has always set his life up in a way, which is why he stopped touring, you know, when they decided to have babies, to start having kids together. Because he's like, my wife needs to be able to do her work. Like, her work is extremely important. It's a calling for her, and she is extremely effective at it. And I want us to have a family that supports her work rather than structuring it around a touring musician, which is what happens. If there's a touring musician in the family has to orient towards that. There's really no way around it. You know what I'm saying? And so he was like, well, this is going to be the orientation of our family, is to support her work. And that's the way their family is set up. And they got, man, there's a lot going on in the family. And there's a lot going on with, like, you know, we do my entire career, this podcast, and we've got all these projects coming and all this dope stuff coming. We do all this stuff together. So I say all that to say that for him to make that type of commitment to himself, that this is how I'm going to spend my free time, by getting up and keeping this promise to myself, teaching myself what I'm really capable of, something that I didn't think I was capable of. And then to say, I'm gonna go and do it with a group of people in this really organized way and have those organizers pull out for, it seems like, no good reason. But to just go and do it by yourself after all of that is like, man, my God. We thank Allah for good companionship, for good friendship. It's really one of the most important things that we could ever ask for. So we're really incredibly grateful for it. And I'm going to wrap it up. And we'll be back next week, inshallah. We recorded a really cool episode that I think we might share with you next week. But Brendan hasn't had a chance to edit it. So we'll see if that one comes next. We'll see what comes next week. But we're very, very grateful for you. Thank you for being here on this journey. Make sure to check out Zakat Foundation. Put some money on something. Just put some money on something. Just go there and do it. Or just go look at Zakat US on social media. Share something good they're doing. Just share it. Somebody else might put some money on it. But that stuff really impacts real people's lives. You don't have to be Muslim. You don't have to. It's a Muslim organization. A lot of the stuff they do is in Muslim places, but not everything. They help the Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians don't have a good history with Muslims, but they saw the Ukraine and they helped them, and they've done it in plenty of places. So go put something on that. And if you are not talking to a therapist and you've never talked to a therapist, check out betterhelp.com and just see what it's about. You can always cancel it. You can always whatever. Betterhelp.com/travelers, and you get a discount. And just give it a shot. Give it a couple months. Just go into it for a couple months. And you know, try different therapists out till you find the right person. Talk to them, share with them what you feel comfortable sharing. You know, only dive in deeper when you feel comfortable and when you trust them to hold it. But and then just see what comes out of that, because a lot of people's ideas about therapy just aren't what, it's just not what therapy is. So it's like, damn, what else do I do? What else can we do? Other than be like, yo, just try it. Just try it. So just try it. And become a Muslim if you want to. Oh, man. And check out the caravan. Like, man, go to brotherali.com and go in the join section, or brotherali.com/join. Just $5 a month. There's all kind of stuff up there. We keep putting things up there, but that's where that's how you really support something in the world. So one of the things I think about with all of these things is like, you look at what's going on in the world, out in the world, or in the world of media, or in the world of ourselves. And it's like, I can't change this. I cannot just flip a switch and make this. But part of what makes me feel like I can move forward is, am I finding something I can do about this? And am I doing that thing? So with Zakat Foundation, you're not going to solve the world's problems. But if you put $5 a month on something, $10 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month, $1,000 a month, whatever you can do, then you can know, like, I'm doing something. I'm not doing nothing. I'm in a group of people that are doing something. Now, if I want to do more, I always can. Same thing with the caravan. Like, in the caravan, it's like, yeah, social media is a mess. The stuff that they're promoting on the airwaves and in popular media and social media, the algorithms and the advertisers and the platforms, it's all crazy and it's all really harmful for artists and for culture itself. I believe that. Maybe you don't feel that way, but I really do. And most of your favorite artists probably feel that way too. And so it's like, well, I can't do everything about that, but I can support an artist. I can support a voice that is trying to really use the platforms to bring people together and to find a common bond of the human condition and just the experience of living life and highlighting the beauty. Like, we don't highlight messiness here. It's not shade and tea. That's not what we do. We don't even do controversial stuff. Not that I have a shortage of opinions. I got a lot of opinions. But that's not what we do. I don't feel like that's what my calling is. That's not what this platform is about. So when you're part of this, it's like, man, I'm supporting something. I am doing something. I'm contributing somewhere to something. I'm keeping an artist going. And there's, you know, at least this one artist. And there's a bunch of artists that have Patreons and all this kind of stuff that you can get down on. So if it's not this one, then maybe if there's somebody you believe in more, subscribe to their thing and do their thing. And if you want to do multiple ones, you can too. There's a lot of people that subscribe to this, and they also do Eli's Gray Crow Fam, and they also do, you know, a variety of things. That's dope. Well, you get down with the caravan, you're doing something about it. And then with therapy, there's no sense of like, I'm going to go to therapy and then I'm just going to be totally right and everything's going to be all. But I'm doing something. I am dedicating at least an hour a week to sitting with somebody, to exploring what's going on inside me. Do I have to be this angry? Do I have to be this dependent on food and porn and drugs and alcohol and whatever? You know, do I have to be this socially awkward? Do I have to be, do I have to carry this anxiety? Do I have to be this, whatever the thing is? Like, these are all different things that we all experience on some level. Does it have to be impossible for me to be in a room with my brother or my mom? Does that have to be impossible? Is there a way for me to successfully be in a room with my mother? Is it possible for me to at least be on speaking terms with my dad before he dies? Is it possible to just to explore that? That's what therapy is about. It's not about being psychoanalyzed and being talked out of your political opinions and, you know, it's not about all of that. And there's different types of therapy for different things. You know, do I have to feel like there's no way I can ever would have, just to put a little time and energy and effort and investment into doing something about this stuff? It takes me out of the category of complete shame, and it just puts me in the fight. It's like, man, I'm doing something. I am actionable. I'm taking an actionable item. I'm making a contribution. I'm making an investment. I'm doing something. Now, if I want to step that up, now that that door is already open, I can always increase it. You know what I'm saying? I could go from, you know, from giving X amount of dot to maybe I can actually start going on some of these things, some of the good that we're doing. Maybe I can actually start showing up at places and facilitating things and actually volunteering. You know, maybe I can start organizing around some of this stuff. Maybe I can start working on policy for these things. Maybe I can start, but now the door is open. You step out of the category of, I know I should, but into, I'm doing something. Somebody used to say, I used to hear this thing, one of these mentors I had back in the day used to say, trying is lying. And I thought it was such a cruel statement because the way he was using it was like that. People would be like, well, I'm trying to do so-and-so. And he's like, trying is lying. You're either doing it or you're not. And it was a cruel way that he was framing it. But then somebody else said that in a way that made me think of it differently. It's like, either you're doing it or you're not. And if you're doing something, even if it's small, don't diminish that. You are doing something. You're taking action in that thing. You know what I mean? Don't say, I'm trying to work out. If you do 5 push-ups a day, you're working out. If you go for a walk for no other reason than to get exercise, or if you start walking to the coffee shop instead of driving there, you're exercising. So don't say, I'm trying to exercise. You are exercising. If you want to increase it, you can, and you should. It could be good to increase it. But you go from being a person who doesn't do something to a person who does it. I didn't mean to spend this long on that. But that's how I feel. I appreciate you all so much. Thank you for letting me do this. It's really cool to drop these episodes and then sign on and look at the numbers and just see like, man, and these numbers are very slowly, but for surely going up. So we appreciate you. We really love you and we pray for you. I'm a person that prays often. I have my face on the floor 5 times a day. I pray for the people that listen to this music, that listen to these podcast episodes. I pray for the people that are connected to us. And I'm very grateful to you. And my whole life has been supported by you over the years. And I wouldn't choose it for any other life. I would not trade my life with anybody's life. Wouldn't trade my experiences and my opportunities and where I'm at in this moment. So you are very much appreciated. We'll talk to you next week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.